on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our June 9th, 2015 edition of Invest Talk. And our goal here is to be a place for you to come and get some quality information, some news about the market, and some perspective as well. That's really what we try to impart on our listeners, is some perspective on all types of markets and asset classes and types of investments that you can make. And we are a sounding board. We want to be the place you come and ask your money related questions, and do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can always call our listener line. You can always talk to us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can ask us questions via Twitter at KPP Financial is our handle, at KPP Financial is our Twitter handle. Or you can get a note directly to myself or Steve by going to investtalk.com, clicking on the Contact Justin or Contact Steve button, and that email will go directly to our email boxes. And we don't offer any magic formula. There is no magic formula in investing. It's really about diligence, discipline, and data. Diligence, discipline, and data. I like that. The three D's. And you know, there's nothing will get your heart pumping faster just thinking about this magic formula of how to invest. There are multiple factors you have to consider, and ultimately the best thing you have to have is the proper frame of mind when making investments. And you know, we're not talking about winning the lottery, and I don't know anybody that personally has won the lottery. Maybe you have, but this is about getting rich slow, not getting rich quick. And a lot of people mistake the two. They think the stock market is a gambling place, so you're just gambling. It's not. It is a great place to make money over the long term. But you have to, like I said, have diligence, you have to have data, and you have to have discipline to employ the types of strategies and things that you need to do to make better financial decisions. And for the rest of us who have not won the lottery, there's no path to riches that can be achieved in a short time frame. A lot of people try to do that in the market, and that's not the case. You know, they get excited about options and things like that. So you know, it requires a lot of work, and we are here to help you achieve your ultimate goals. We do that for our clients at KPP Financial. We do that for we try to help our listeners do the same, because you can do this yourself. You can. But it takes time, it takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of discipline, it takes a lot of information to get that you need to gather to make proper decisions. Not trying to get too preachy on you, but the whole idea is to set some financial goals and keep true to them. And it's all about taking a different route than most people, because most people think with their emotion or take action with their emotions, not with logic. And you know, it all takes is a simple formula: spending less than you earn and invest the difference in appreciating assets, not getting caught up in hype. You know, spending 10% less of every paycheck will do it. So it's pretty simple. Might take several decades, but you will end up wealthy. And we have been touting this for years on InvestTalk. InvestTalk's been around for 15 plus years now. I think we might be calling the 20-year mark coming up. Now, you've heard us talk about no credit card debt, spend less than you earn, have no car debt. That would mean saving up to buy that new car. Then buy the one that you can afford instead of taking out a loan, making car payments, paying interest, etc. Start making payments now into a savings account, and then you can go buy the next one. It's hard for people to do that these days because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses. But the Joneses usually hit financial ruin at some point. And that you don't want that to be you. Now, you can take out debt to buy a home, etc. But do that as a home. Most people, that's kind of their first resort. They have to. But all other debt, you know, kind of should be a last resort. Okay? So we're here to help you in any way you can during this hour and beyond, whether it's about the markets, whether it's about real estate, whether it's about your checking account, savings account, interest rates, whatever it is money related, we want to be here for you. So let's go to our first caller. This is Frank from Redwood City. How are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing good. What's Steve doing today? Is he vacationing?
Steve, actually, yes, he's on vacation. He'll be back on Thursday.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, Justin, I had a question for you regarding INSY.
Okay.
It did a split recently, and I just want to see what your thoughts were on the company and going forth, and what do you think it has some strength for long term?
Okay, you're looking at Insys Therapeutics. This is a biotech company develop supportive care products for breakthrough cancer treatments. So it's a cancer-related biotech company. They're supposed to earn 94 cents a share this year after making $1.08 next year. Kind of all over the board with earnings. Relatively new company, went IPO at $2.66, now it's at $33 a share. So it'd have been great if you got in that IPO. Now let's look at kind of the fundamentals. You know, biotechs historically are very, very high risk names. The whole biotech sector is in a pretty big bubble at this point. This is a company that's valued at $1.2 billion. That's its market cap, $1.2 billion. No debt, I like that, especially for a biotech company. Free cash flow, much smaller than that, about $35 million, I'm sorry. So for a biotech company, I actually don't hate this. This isn't too bad from a valuation standpoint. Now, is it cheap? Certainly not. In no way, shape, or form is this a cheap stock trading at P of, based on this year's earnings, about 35. Now, earnings are growing 50%. I would wonder why it's going down 13%. Estimates are sort to go down 13% this year. Do you know why that is?
And they did have some litigation stuff about some of the salespeople on those question marks, but nothing proven, so it took some big dips because of those negative factors that might have come in.
Yeah, so maybe it was like a settlement issue where they had to settle, something like that.
Yeah.
So I could see that being the issue. Now, operating margins, they dipped a little bit, so that could be a reason. I don't hate it, to be honest with you. The biggest problem for me is it's in the biotech space, and the biotech industry is going to take a big dive at some point in the near future because of the overvaluation, the insanity that's happening in that industry of overvaluing all these biotech companies and all the money flowing in there. The valuations are just so out of whack generally. For this company, it's a little expensive, but it's not crazy expensive like I've seen a lot of other biotech companies. They at least make money. Management owns 70%. Earnings growth and growth overall is slowing, but that's just to be expected at some point. You know, the law of large numbers, it gets hard to grow their earnings 500% like they did about a year and a half ago. They were growing their earnings and sales 500%. Last quarter, it's 70 and 50%. So I kind of like it. Go for it.
Let me ask you this. It just did a 2-for-1 split. And is that a good thing or a bad thing for this stock at this point?
Studies show that's actually a good thing in the near to short to medium term. Long term, I don't think it's going to change it much, but it does. It is a positive in the short to medium term. So you know, it depends on your time frame. If you're thinking short to medium term, you know, go for it. Keep a tight stop on this, maybe 10% or so. But I would go for it and try to ride the momentum. But understand it is high risk.
Great, thank you.
No problem. Thanks for calling, Frank. Now, what is the outlook for bonds in the next 3 to 5 years? Is it time to dump your bonds? It's one of our talking points today. I also want to talk about active versus passive mutual funds. Talk about spending in retirement and why that is just as important, if not more important, than your retirement income. And then we can talk about Greece as well, because that is a big issue coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Now, what is your risk number? 41, 52, 78. There's a way to know. And when you do, you can match up your retirement portfolio in a way that makes good sense and easy sense. You know, what is your risk score based on your risk tolerance? That's what we do. We have a free risk analysis tool. It's right on our website. And then once we get that number back, 1 to 99, we can say, okay, what is your portfolio? And are you invested like your risk, along with your risk? Are you taking too much risk, not enough risk, etc.? And it's there for everyone to use on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call. Ask your question on today's show. I know you probably have a lot of questions. I know there's something you've been thinking about money-related that you want to get more insight in. So give us a call. We have about a half hour left in the show. Sorry, 40 minutes left in the show, but it goes by quicker than you think. Now, today in the markets, let's see, what did the market do overall? The S&P ended up a whopping 0.87 points, less than 1 point, pretty much a flat day on the S&P. The Dow closed down 2.5 points, basically flat. The NASDAQ was down 7 points. Yeah, that would be a very modest down day. You had small caps down about a third of 1%, so that lagged as well. And just overall, it was a fairly flat day. Interest rates rose a little bit more, and this is after, you know, a pretty rough start to the week. So it's kind of a pause day. We did hit some support on the S&P technically, so that helped the markets, but we didn't bounce in a strong manner. We really didn't. So I think you're probably going to see the market chop around here, at least until the Fed comes out with their statement. I believe it's the next week. Yeah, I believe it's 6th. Let me look at the calendar. I'm trying to remember exact dates. Yeah, the 16th and 17th, I believe. It's middle of next week is the Fed meeting. So I you'll probably see a lot of chop. And really the market, the reason for the weakness is higher interest rates. Bottom line. I've been talking about this for a couple of years now. The market is addicted to low interest rates. Fed money printing. Making financial conditions easy. Easy money. It's created a ton of bubbles in the past, and it's done the same here with our markets, and not just the equity markets, but bond markets as well. So there's a lot of risk in the major indexes, and you're starting to see that come to the forefront with the bond yields rising, the stock market really stagnating on the year. The Dow, as it closed yesterday, was down for the year, and it was down slightly today. So Dow is down for the year. Just an FYI. Now get a no-cost expert opinion exploring your retirement options. Meet up with Steve at one of the KPP Financial Satellite offices in California, or just join up on a Skype or even just a good old phone call. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And we hope you'll take the time to join our InvestTalk insiders and gain access to some useful info sheets on annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance. There's an updated ETF list, too. You can have access to all these and more when you're an InvestTalk insider. It's free. Just sign up on investtalk.com.
We try to answer your questions whenever you have them. Not just 4 to 5 live each and every day, but 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART is the number, and that's how you reach out to us and ask your question, and we will answer your question on the next show. And here's one that came in before today's program.
Hello, this is Mike from Washington State, and I have a question about IRAs. I had some years ago opened an IRA with a financial institution for mutual funds, and then for diversification a few years later, I opened a different IRA with a different company. So my question is it legal and right and okay to have IRAs with different financial institutions? Appreciate listening to your podcast, and I want to thank you for all your help.
Yes. Simple answer is yes. You can have multiple IRAs. You can have as many IRAs as you want. Open with as many financial institutions as you want. There's two things to consider. Obviously, you can only put in a certain limit. You know, each year it changes a lot. You know, this year I believe it's $6,500 you can put into an IRA, and then you have a catch-up amount if you're over the age of 50. And so that's your limit on all your IRAs, not per IRA. That's total for any one given year. So that limit, that doesn't help you change that limit. Okay, but you can have as many IRAs open as you want. Now the issue is most brokerage firms, and I think every brokerage firm I've ever seen, charges an IRA fee to each account. So if you have multiple IRAs, now you're paying multiple IRA fees. Is that something you really want to do? I mean, I wouldn't, but it's something you can do. We always say it's best to combine your IRA into one account, all your IRAs into one account, have them at one brokerage firm, and then you can trade it all, you know, trade it combined. You can manage that portfolio a lot easier if it's all at one brokerage house, right? So that's what we always say, but you can do whatever you want, really. Now let's talk about interest rates. The 10-year bond, the 10-year now has risen. It's now at 2.39%. As the close yesterday, I think it was up a little bit today. And interest rates are on the rise. And that's because the market realizes that the Fed wants to raise interest rates. They desperately want to raise interest rates. Just to get off zero. You know, they've been on zero for almost a decade. You realize that? 2006. Actually, no, 2006 is the last time they raised interest rates. They got to zero in 2008, so maybe not quite a decade, but you're talking 7-8 years now. We've been on zero interest rate policy. It's kind of a lot. So I think in September they will raise rates. Will they continue to raise rates after that? I think a lot will depend on how the economy handles that, how the markets handle that, because ultimately the markets will dictate what the economy does. If the market sells off a ton, the economy is going to come right down with it. And they could pause and stay at 0.25% of the Fed funds rate for a while. So the big question is, if you have bonds, should you be worried? Well, I think if you have individual bonds and you're fairly certain that the companies you own bonds with are going to be able to survive a recession, then I would say keep them, hold them to maturity. And it doesn't matter. You know, we do that with our balanced income program. We have corporate bonds in there, but we hold them to maturity. So whether interest rates go up and down, sure, the values of the bonds might change a little bit. But at the end of the day, when they mature, you get your full par back and you don't lose any money. You get your interest and you're all good, right? So that's the ultimate, that's what you have to think about when you're holding individual bonds. Now, if you hold a bond fund, then you have to look at the maturity dates, the average duration. How is that a long-term bond fund, intermediate-term bond fund, short-term bond fund? Because the managers are always going to continue to buy bonds as the holdings in the portfolio mature. So you're going to continue to be exposed to interest rates. And the ultimate goal right now, I think, in the I would say medium term, is to avoid interest rate risk or reduce your interest rate risk. And you can see the difference in risk depending on duration by looking at just treasury ETFs. So you have the IEF, for example, 7 to 10 year treasuries. And this is a company, this is an ETF that duration is 7 to 10 years. That's intermediate term. And it hit a high of about 110. And now we're down to about 104. High of 110 earlier this year. We're down to about 104. So you're talking 6% or so pullback. And then you go with like GOVT, which is a short-term iShares Barclays U.S. Treasury bond. Short-term. That hit a high of, let's see, what was that? 25 and a half. And now we're at 25. So it went down, is that 2%? So that's short term. So you can see the difference, 6% versus 2%. You can see the difference in sensitivity to interest rates. So understand, if you own bond funds, understand what you're owning and what risk you're taking. Now, Steve's economic outlook for June went out to InvestTalk insiders last week, and it's free. If you want to become an InvestTalk insider, just go to investtalk.com. Now, our first priority is answering your questions. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Chris from Mississippi. I just got done listening to yesterday's Invest Talk, and Justin talked about leveraged ETFs. I was trading TVIX. That's a leveraged VIX ETF. And the last time I traded it, I bought it at, I guess it's probably about $2.30. And now it's down under a dollar because, you know, the market just kept going up and volatility hasn't been real volatile. And I see it going down and down. What's your advice? Should I just sit this out and wait for a disruption in the market and try to get out on the next time it bounces up, or sell it now, or, I don't know, what would you do? Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, this is a great example of yesterday someone called about, I think it was TQQQ, which is a triple leveraged NASDAQ ETF, so following the Qs, but leveraged times three. And he's looking at this caller's, that inspired this caller to ask about TVIX, which he bought about, $2 and a little over $2 a share. And now it's at 93 cents a share at the close of the day, down 2 cents. And 2 cents, that's 2%. Remember, it's a less than a dollar stock. So this is a great example of how these leverage ETFs are just kill investors' return over the long term because it's gone against them. It's gone against investors. Volatility has gone against investors. And this is what it's tracking. So if volatility spikes, this will go up, and it'll go up big. But that's a trade. You only want to hold this short term, like I said, intraday, maybe a week max, etc. And anything beyond that, you're just taking a ton of risk. And this guy's lost over 50% in this position. And if you go back to 2011, this traded as high. Get this. Split adjusted, because this has splits and it's probably going to split again. Now it's a reverse split. I'm sorry. It's going to have a reverse split. And it continues to reverse split. And back in 2011, it traded split adjusted as high as $8,700 per share. $8,700 per share. You go back 10 years, and its high was, let's see, what was its ultimate high? Yeah, I guess that was the ultimate high. So you can see how these type of vehicles, these leveraged vehicles, erode value, and they can do great in the short term when it goes for you, but if it goes against you, whatever these leverage ETFs are tracking, you will get killed. So my advice to the caller is sell. Get out. Don't be holding this any longer. You've already taken your loans. Make this a lesson. Learn your lesson. And everyone else out there should learn their lesson. You can lose a lot of money very quickly in these leverage ETFs. And so you need to heed my advice, sell it, and move on. Now let's talk about active versus passive. Everybody's the new trend is just buy an index, right? Buy an index, you'll do better. Fees are low, they're great. Well, I think that's true in certain cases, but it is by no means a blanket statement. And I'm going to talk about a report that came from Fidelity. And obviously, Fidelity is a little biased. They do have passive funds, but they have active funds as well. But what they did was they, and other reports have shown this, is that in large cap U.S. stocks, passive investing, meaning just investing in low fee ETFs or mutual funds that track the broader indexes like the S&P, etc., you will generally do better. Generally do better than picking, you know, the average active mutual fund, right? But when you start broadening out to other asset categories like small cap funds, international funds, bond funds, the potential for outperformance by an active manager is much, much greater. And actually, the statistics show it's better to go with an active manager and finding the best active managers in those particular areas of the marketplace. So don't get roped into this idea that passive investing is the only way to go and the only thing you should consider. Because active matters a lot when you get into other asset categories. And if you want to have broad diversification with your portfolio, which you should have other areas of the marketplace in your portfolio than just large cap U.S. stocks. Especially now where the value is in global stocks, okay, companies abroad. And if you're trying to get exposure there, it's actually better to invest in really great managers that have shown over time have done well picking the best values and the best companies in overseas. And they've done a good job at it. And statistics show that. So don't think that passive investing is the only path to being successful. In fact, what you should do is just filter for active funds that have low fees. Because that's really the big issue, is there's a lot of these active funds that have high fees. But if you can filter them out for low fee, and not necessarily has to be as low as the indexes, just in the top 25% tile of low fee active funds, meaning they're the quarter of active funds that have the lowest fees, okay? You're automatically going to get a lot towards, or far, you're going to get towards the passive performance very quickly. And then if you just filter that a little bit more by the funds, families that have a lot of resources, that have the track records of doing well, you can get some great active funds that will do much, much better over the long term. So ultimately, you just got to focus on low fees, low fee funds, you know, the ETFs, mutual funds, whatever they are, low fee is very, very important. So understand, passive, it's not just one or the other. It's really a combination of both. Now, these dates for Steve's portfolio reviews are just about full. He's in San Ramon next week, June 16th. And that date is now fully booked, but there are a couple spots available in San Jose on the 17th, the next day. He's going to spend a couple days up in the Bay Area meeting with current clients, existing clients, I guess that'd be both, existing clients and prospective clients as well. And to save your hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Make an Appointment button.
If you'd like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to the Investments tab on investtalk.com. Look for the Balanced Income Program. It's a fully diversified program designed to reduce risk from any one stock, bond, or sector. And as with all of the programs, one or more of KPP Financial principals invest their money right alongside their clients. Look for the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
Hey, Steve, this is Oscar from San Francisco. Just calling in regards to CVS. Wondering what you think about it and at what price would you get into it if you would buy it. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at CVS Health, and this has been a rock star as of late, and it's certainly a good company. They operate 7,800 pharmacy and drug stores in 44 states throughout the U.S., $112 billion market cap. Company yields about 1.4%. Earnings are growing about in the mid-teens. Revenue growing in the low teens. And modest amount of debt. They recently increased their dividend, which is nice. Let's check out some of their cash flow statistics. I like to look at cash flow, one of my favorite measurements to see how much cash the company has created. So it's creating about $6 billion in free cash flow last year. Now, if you count the trailing 12 months, it's actually dipped a little bit, so that's a little bit worrisome. Operating cash flow is dipping a little bit. Profitability is staying steady, which is good. Return on investment capital, 10%, rising, that's positive. So I like it generally from its from a perspective of a strong company, low debt, good cash flow, etc. A company you should definitely have on your watch list. Now, the big question is, should you buy it now? And if you don't buy it now, where should you buy it? Well, I would say this is not the area because I think it's weak. It is weakening. It hit a double top. It's really rolling over pretty hard. And I think it's probably going to head. The next big support level is right in the low 90 area. And right now it's just dipped below $100 a share, $99.98. So that would be my first buy point, is that $90 area. That's good support. And then ultimately, I would like to pick it up in the low 80s. Low 80s is where I'd say, okay, I really like this name from a longer-term perspective, and that's where I would start to pick it up as a good value. But not yet. I would say low 90s is maybe your first buy, and then low 80s, maybe fill up your portfolio with as much as you would hold in the company, whether it's 3% of your portfolio, 2%, whatever. I wouldn't go more than 5% of your portfolio in CVS or any company. But those would be my my buy triggers. Low 90s, low 80s. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. Getting the load off is what we're talking about today. And you know that's no load mutual funds are the ones with no sales charge. But do you know the answer to this? A true or false quiz. Now investing in a loaded fund is more expensive, but performance tends to be better than no-load funds over the long term. True or false? True or false? You pay the load up front, but the performance tends to be better than no-load funds over the long term. The answer is false. A load is a sales charge levied by the fund. So if you invest $1,000, a 4% load, for example, only $960 goes to work for you. The other $40 goes to whoever's selling that fund to you. Okay. Studies have shown that on average, load funds perform no better than cheaper no-load funds. In fact, when you include the cost of the load, they even underperform over time. So don't think that if somebody's selling you a loaded fund, if you're thinking about buying a fund with a sales load, even on the front end or the back end, understand that, because a lot of times they'll sell you a fund that has a back end load, meaning you, when you sell it, then you got to pay that load. So there's A shares on the front end, C shares usually on the back end. So make sure that whatever fund you're buying, it's a no-load fund, no transaction fee fund. There are plenty out there, tons out there, thousands out there. Don't think that you don't think that you're pigeonholed into buying a loaded fund, because you never are. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Justin. How are you?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Just two security I was hoping I'd get your opinion on.
Okay.
The first one is QIHU.
Okay.
And the other one is TCB.
Is TCB. Okay. So let's look at QIHU first. This is QHU360 Technologies. They're a Chinese company, provider of internet security software, browser search, and online gaming developed by third parties. Great growth. About revenues are growing in the mid-40 range last quarter, 45%. Now, a year ago, they were going over 100%. It's kind of that law of large numbers things, though. It gets harder and harder as the comps get bigger and bigger. Now, profit, though, is only growing in the single digits the last two quarters. That worries me a little bit. So it is a little expensive. Do you know what they do? I mean, do you understand what they do?
Yeah, it's mostly internet security, and as you mentioned, what you just said.
Okay. You know, the chart is getting stronger. I like that. Now, the big question, is that just on the back of China and the strength in China? So I would say I kind of like it. I'm kind of a fan of it. I don't love it because it is a little expensive, but it is probably going to be tied to the China market. So I would give it a 7 out of 10 if I were to give it some sort of a ranking. Now, the other company is TCF Financial Corp., holding company for TCF National Bank. This is a regional bank, and they've been doing well because interest rates are going up, and they're going to be able to lend at higher rates, right? And they're still borrowing from their depositors at next to nothing. So generally, it looks pretty good. So I like both of these. I like TCF probably a little bit better. From a valuation perspective, pays a dividend, and I like the trends in the industry. The Chinese one, much higher risk, not nearly as good a value, but definitely higher upside. So it depends on what you're looking for.
Possible. I was hoping this like a momentum trade for possibly another.
Both of those, both of those would be good momentum trades. Thanks for the call, Mike. Now it's time to get your question in before we're done for the day. We have about 7 minutes left in the show. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. If any money questions for you, give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. This is one of the few podcasts that we know about that invites your participation, your voice. Have a conversation about your money issues with professional portfolio managers. The podcast is produced live every weekday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. So join in. The number is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 more minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call, you better do it ASAP. Let's talk a little bit about spending in retirement. You know, a lot of people focus on retirement income, but really it's all about your spending habits in retirement that will dictate how much income you really need. And that's something we help work out with clients and understand that we do a retirement map to make sure that they're on track for retirement so that they can figure out when they should retire, how much they need to be saving, whether it's, and this isn't just for people that are close to or in retirement, this is for somebody who's even younger, 30, 40 years old, and many years from retirement. It gives a good idea of how much they need to save to get to the point where they can retire, because ultimately that should be your goal, and it's our goal to help clients with that. So the general rule is to replace 70 to 80% of pre-retirement income. Right? And that's generally how much you'll be spending, right? Well, that rule of thumb is just very general. You know, the figure of 70% of your spending habits in retirement from what your spending habits were when you're working. That's the average, but not many people are average. Some people are a lot lower, some people are a lot higher. So it is a might be a good starting point, but you have to understand that mileage will vary dramatically. And your spending habits aren't probably going to be steady. Studies actually show that the younger you are in retirement, the more money you're going to spend. It actually falls as you get older. Retirees aged 65 to 74 spend 20% less than those who are 55 to 64. You know, the ones that retired early. And the 75 and over crowd spend 40% less than those who are 55 to 64 and 26% less than those that are 65 to 74. And the argument here is that discretionary spending on travel, dining out, entertainment, they decrease with age. A lot of times because, I mean, I just know my grandpa, he doesn't like to travel, doesn't like to go out. The older you are, that just tends to how it is. You'd rather stay at home and be comfortable than go out and deal with crowds and a bunch of people and noise, etc. That's just the way it is. So understand that your retirement spending will be probably lumpy. It's not going to be smooth. And it will probably generally decline as you go on. Okay? And you also understand your life expectancy. The odds of one spouse living 20 or 30 years in retirement are pretty good, but not very good for both husband and wife to live 20 or 30 years in retirement. And, you know, when one passes away, food expenses drop, discretionary spending drops, those type of things. So understand that retirement is dynamic, but you have to understand that trajectory, but you still need a number to figure out how much you need to retire. And let's make time for one more question. 888-99-CHART is our direct line to InvestTalk. Gary called from San Diego.
My question is, why do they use the Dow Jones Industrial Average as kind of like, you know, the benchmark, which is only comprised of 30 stocks? Why don't they use the Dow Jones Composite Index, you know, as the daily barometer? Anyway, I know it's a simple question, but maybe someday on your radio program you can explain it. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, the Dow Jones Composite Index. That's still only 65 stocks. It's broader, but it's not ultimately broader. And that's one thing I don't like. And that's one thing, if you go to our website, go to investtalk.com, you'll notice the Dow isn't on there. Why? Because the Dow's only 30 stocks. He's making my point for me. S&P. That's what you look at. It's 500 companies. Much broader. Much more diversified. Better sense of what the market's doing. Okay. Vanguard Total Stock Market Index. Even better. My favorite is ACWI. It's an ETF. The All World Index. All World. You're getting very, very broad index right there. See what the overall market's doing. MSCI All World Index. That's the best one I like to look at. But for the general population, S&P. Don't look at the Dow. It's time to wrap it up for the day. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein. For Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you have a good evening. Let's meet here again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.